It's Labor Day, H-Town, live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyer Studios. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
Hi, Payne and Pendergast. We are acknowledging those of you that are up with us listening on a holiday today. Text message. I'm high right now, playing the Ravens in the AFC Championship game on Madden, listening to Sean and Seth, hashtag retired at 47. Army. Retired Army. Oh, thank you for thank you for your service, sir or ma'am. Appreciate that.
So it's been 20-plus years.
Yeah.
Yep. I was in when we were at the Super Bowl, one of my Uber drivers was a recently retired Marine who'd been in all through, I think he enlisted before 9/11. I think he enlisted the summer before 9/11.
Wow.
Yeah. And then was there the whole time. But we had an interesting chat about just how things have changed in the Marines. And he was like, he wasn't being a grumpy old man about it. He's like, no, there was some stuff that they used to do back in the day that was just stupid. But now it's, he's not happy with all the changes.
Did he get deployed in any of the stuff related to 9/11 at all?
Oh, God, yeah. No, he ended up, I mean, he was, like, that's the thing, the people that have retired now, a lot of them have been, I mean, they've been in combat arenas for decades.
Yep.
Like, it's just stuff that you don't, that hasn't happened all that much, even in human history. That's why I get frustrated sometimes when people talk about, when they try to lump in all millennials or all Gen Z as, this or that, whatever negative thing they want to say about them. Like, all right, you know, you're including in that, like, some of the most ridiculously well-trained and efficient military members that have ever existed in all of mankind. Yeah, let's not just paint with a broad brush here. Yeah.
Yep.
There are people who've been at war. There are millennials who are at war for decades.
Oh,
I don't like, painting that guy in the brush of like, they only want, they don't work hard these days. Yeah.
Someone texting in working at the Kroger's meat department. I like the Kroger's meat department. If you work in the Kroger's sushi department, then you're really doing the Lord's work. I like the sushi at the Kroger's sushi department. They do a good job there. My poke bowls on game day when I come up here.
You ever eat convenience store sushi?
Probably at some point I have, I'm guessing. Yeah. But
it feels like a big leap. I don't know.
I would have thought grocery store sushi is a big leap, but it's not. It's really good.
It's
quality.
Well, no, I know the grocery stores. The grocery stores in Houston, it's over. The supermarkets don't feel like you're walking into. It's just different.
Have you eaten convenience store sushi?
No. It's a leap for me to eat a convenience store sandwich. I don't know. Yeah. Anytime any kind of condiment or food stuff like a deli meat or something gets involved at a convenience store, I have a hard time with that.
What about the hot dogs that are on the roller things there?
No, I won't do a rot. I don't do the hot dogs, but I've done. I'll definitely do a taquito or something like that.
That are out on the roller things right
yeah,
now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a big trust in society right there, man, that they haven't been messing with those taquitos if they've been sitting there for a few hours.
If I'm going with a taquito, I'm in a different frame of mind usually.
Gotcha.
That's more of a munchy type thing.
Makes sense.
Brandy drove me to the convenience store because I was hungry but not capable of driving, and I get 7 taquitos.
I got you. I got you. All right, did you happen to see any of Dave Portnoy's debut on Fox Sports this weekend?
Only a couple of the clips. I was driving up to visit my mom, so I didn't really I didn't have time to take all of it in, in all of his majesty. What's your overall take from it?
Pure wrestling heel. My overall take on, we're going to play some audio from it here in a second. My big overall take on it was, in the parts that I saw, I didn't see all of it. A lot of it I saw on social media because I was doing an appearance out in Katy, but it appeared to be exactly what we thought it would be, which is over the top wrestling heel. He's a Michigan guy. They were in Columbus. There was all sorts of controversy, whether real or fabricated, about him being allowed in the stadium. You and I had Rob Stone on last Thursday, who hosts the show Big Noon Saturday, and he didn't know. At least if he did know, he wasn't telling us. He said he didn't know what the deal was with Portnoy and what that was going to be. He got a big introduction with the smoke and coming out of a tunnel, and he sang the Michigan fight song as he walked up to the stage to take his spot with Brady Quinn, Matt Leinart, Mark Ingram, Urban Meyer, and Rob Stone. Here's what his introduction sounded like.
Columbus has been waiting for this moment for a couple days now.
Yeah.
It is time now to introduce the newest member of our Big Noon kickoff team, the one, the only Dave Portnoy. Destroying our security budget.
Stoner saying, you've just destroyed our security budget. He walked out singing the Michigan fight song.
Yeah.
To a stadium full of Columbus people.
Yeah, I know. I think that, what was it like on the desk with him? Did Urban Meyer get annoyed with him at all or anything?
A little bit. They traded jerseys. You know, it was, it looked like Urban was playing along.
Okay.
He didn't spend
because Urban Meyer used to be very critical of Pat McAfee's antics.
Yeah.
That he, you know, he didn't, he thought that was a bunch of tomfoolery.
Yeah.
Where people just wanted to hear hardcore football talk. So I was most curious about how he'd receive Dave Portnoy.
Portnoy didn't spend a ton of time up at the desk. He did on that scene. He came up to the desk and they chatted for a little bit. When he gave his prediction on the game, he was by himself down off to the side. And here's what that sounded like.
Ohio State, this pass here, Ohio State killed Tennessee, basically made them quit. Then they beat Texas. Michigan's beaten Alabama in the last 2 years. Out in the Midwest, this means something. I'm so sick of hearing about the SEC. Last year in the bowls, the Big Ten was 5-1 against the SEC teams. Yet you still hear SEC, SEC this, SEC that, better down south. No, Midwestern football. We like a good punt in Iowa. We respect 3 yards up the middle. The Big Ten is back in charge, man football, and along those lines, these people may be surprised. I'm taking the Buckeyes today. I think they beat, now they're cheering for me. I think Buckeyes take the horns down and bring another win for the Big Ten.
Okay, so he picked Ohio State. At first, Seth, when I was watching him and he was doing all this heel stuff, he was basically just agitating the Ohio State crowd. I'm like, okay, I wonder what the shelf life of this is going to be when he's not doing Ohio State games. Like, what's, you know... Who's the foil?
Yeah, just riling up the crowd and everything. I think that's what was merited that day. It's not always going to have to be him talking smack about Ohio State or the Big Ten or anything else like that.
Well, we heard that one of the reasons they brought him on there was to be a Big Ten homer.
Yeah.
And I think that's when I heard his prediction of Ohio State there, I'm like, all right, he's not just there to be a heel for Ohio State people. He's there to home for the Big Ten. Because Fox is sort of the Big Ten network and the ESPN, I think people feel like stumps for the SEC all the time. So in this age where there's this campaign going on to get teams into the playoffs now, this 12-team playoff, it almost feels like Fox says, okay, well, we need a guy who's just going to be a complete homer for the Big Ten.
Well, it's not like it was it's not necessarily a homer pick to choose Ohio State over Texas because Ohio State was favored over Texas.
No, but for him it is. I mean, he hates Ohio State.
Right, it is. Yeah. I don't know. I just like with Arch Manning, I don't want to draw too many conclusions based on week one. Like if he had chosen Ohio State, even though they were 14-point underdogs or something, well then, okay, I can't take him seriously. I think, Portnoy's no dummy. You might hate him, but he's no dummy. I think over time, he's probably going to be like any other panelist, and he's going to have like less necessarily testosterone-fueled takes or what have you. I don't know.
Do you care about Dave Portnoy's opinions, like analyzing games at all? Like,
if he makes a good point, I suppose. I don't know. Not any more so than maybe Charles Barkley talking about NCAA basketball.
Correct.
I don't necessarily, but I don't really care. It's hard for me because I don't really care about any of those guys on the pregame. Like, it's usually just such surface level stuff that it's it really is more about the production and the entertainment value more so than anything else. I think it was a smart move by them just because he brings a lot of eyeballs with him. Like, Barstool is a giant, and there's going to be a lot of people that might not typically watch the pregame shows or whatever. They're going to watch. I guess the question is, are people going to turn away from it because Portnoy's on there? That's where
Sick of Portnoy being a jerk on there.
Yeah. People claim that they've gotten sick of McAfee on some of his other platforms, but I don't think it's borne out in the ratings necessarily. I think that he'll attract eyeballs, and whatever his takes are, it's kind of like when they bring the. It's I don't think he's going to turn enough people off that it hurts him somehow. I think he's just going to bring more people to it.
See, I think every week, and I don't know if it's going to turn people off or not. I think every week it's going to be some new wrestling shtick with Portnoy. Like, I don't think he ever settles in and becomes an actual analyst on the panel or anything. Like, he is a sideshow on that thing, is what it feels like to me. The comparison to McAfee always felt a little lazy to me, just because if you, and again, it's just one show with Portnoy. McAfee, to my knowledge, and I watch College Game Day fairly religiously, he does the opposite of what Portnoy did. McAfee comes on and kisses the ass of whoever the home crowd is out there. He's like a babyface. He's a good guy to them. Portnoy was there to irritate all the people in the stadium there.
Yeah, that is a good, McAfee.
They're both loud.
People get annoyed with McAfee, but he's generally very positive. It's very rare that he just goes after a school or a person and attacks them. Whereas Portnoy is not going to be afraid to go after specific players, go after the schools themselves. They're just different. Yeah, they're much different. I think the similarity is just in that they both have huge social media audiences.
Yes.
So that was the, and McAfee kind of did it on both sides, though, because he was a former player, so he was on networks, but he was also on his YouTube channel. Mm-hmm. But when they bring him now, a lot of the appeal of having McAfee on a show is that he's just got such a huge YouTube audience and everything else that comes with it, that the TV networks feel like, okay, yeah, we got to have him here because those people are going to watch now. That's the comparison. Portnoy's the same way. He's completely been driven by social media.
Well, the other thing with McAfee, and this is probably a little bit like inside, but people that work with McAfee love working with McAfee. Mm-hmm. I know people in WWE who, when McAfee was doing Monday Night Raw, he doesn't do WWE anymore because he just ran out of, there's only 24 hours in a day and there's only so much your body can take. They loved working with him in WWE. There's stories of him behind the scenes at ESPN when they had to get rid of some people for budget reasons. McAfee's offering up, hey, take it out of my pay. We need this, and that guy behind the scenes. People that work with McAfee, I know at WWE and from what I've heard at ESPN, all really like working with him. I don't know how much people. Portnoy got sideways with ESPN for the brief time Barstool was with them. Like, the Barstool.
Yeah, but that wasn't even anything they did. That was before they even had a chance to get, like, do anything. They got canceled because somebody in the one of the executives at ESPN said, no, I don't like these guys.
Right, right.
I think the interesting thing is one of the things that Portnoy. He's been an actual employer of more people than McAfee has been. Yeah. And so he's had issues with various employees or whatever. But when it comes to that, like now one of his competitors is what used to be a Barstool podcast, Bussin' with the Boys. Mm-hmm. Now ESPN is using Bussin' with the Boys now on Saturday morning as well, right? Mm-hmm. So like that's he has a lot of people in media who got their start with him.
Including McAfee.
McAfee as well. You're right. Yeah, McAfee as well. Yeah. So that's an interesting dynamic there is that I know there's a lot of people that like Portnoy because he basically gave them their start and then wasn't a jerk and didn't try to shut them down when they went off on their own.
Yeah. I mean, you brought up Urban Meyer. Like that would be the interesting part if we started to hear things behind the scenes that Urban Meyer didn't like Dave Portnoy or vice versa. You know, there's a power struggle of some sort.
I think with Portnoy, the potential is just for him doing a lot of stuff away from the desk. Did he do a pizza review of a Columbus pizzeria or anything?
Not that
they used on the broadcast, at least. I'm sure he did one on his own social media, but
maybe.
That would be him doing a pizza review. In one of the college town places or something that kind of stuff. I don't think he's going to be on the desk as much as McAfee is.
No. Oh, no. McAfee's a fixture on the desk. He definitely felt like somebody who was on this sidecar compared to the five guys on the set from the parts that I saw and the clips that I saw, too. Most of the clips, the only one that I saw of him up at the desk was him walking up there that we played doing the fight song and him and Urban Meyer giving him an Ohio State jersey up there.
The thing that guys like Portnoy and McAfee have done a really good job of and why they're so successful online is that they create the feel of, oh, I'm hanging out with these guys.
Community.
Yeah, there's a community around it. And I think that's where the appeal for that show, or like for Fox to want to bring him in, they want to be sure that the people who already follow Portnoy feel like, oh, I get to hang out with Portnoy on Saturday morning.
Yeah.
And that ends up probably being a lot of what he, his man on the street type stuff more so than the desk stuff.
Yeah, well, like who he was, the clips that I saw and the parts of the broadcast I saw, he was Portnoy. There was nothing inauthentic about it. Like he wasn't on all his platforms.
They're not gonna make him dress in a suit and sit down and give his three reasons for three keys to the game or anything like that.
Yeah, he's in a Michigan shirt. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Labor Day Monday. Hopefully you're up with us listening. We appreciate you if you are. The experts at the NFL or at NFL.com did their picks for the upcoming season. What are the experts saying about the Houston Texans? Are they not only the pick in the AFC South, are they the heaviest pick in the AFC amongst the experts? We'll dig into that coming up next. All right, Payne and Pendergast, Seth, you're getting agreement from our texting audience on your take going back a couple segments ago when I played the audio from Lopez that if the 1986 Astros, that they were one play away in the NLCS from probably winning the World Series. I took great umbrage with Lopez's definition of probably. It was part of a broader argument about the golden era of sports in Houston being 1975 through 2000 as opposed to the current day stuff. And you said that, well, Houston was a tighter community, a smaller community back then.
Yeah, it was like a third the size that it is now, which I think means a lot more geographically than it does in terms of actual population. It's a, you know, there was a time when the memorial area out there was a suburb, you know, like where it was a more geographically close-knit community. Yep. It was easier to get around and it was smaller. There was the 2.5 million people as opposed to 7 million people or so right now. So I think it just, it felt more like, as one of the texters said, it felt more like a town than a city.
Yeah, 100% correct, Seth. This is the text. We were a town back then, not a city. Another texter, Seth, exactly right. It felt more like a citywide community back then. Houston in the 60s through the 80s was gold, all caps. We had Hakeem Olajuwon and Earl Campbell. That is true. Like the thing I said to you during the break about that, and again, I moved here in 94, so I feel like I got here after sort of, I know it was still inside the bracket of what Lopez was talking about.
Yeah.
But I feel like what you're talking about is really like a 70s and 80s and 60s, 70s, 80s phenomenon. You know, the dome got built, all, you know, the summit, all those other things. I think it's probably symptomatic of stuff, not just in Houston, but a lot of cities where the acceleration of growth of all of our regular people incomes is far below this explosion in the incomes of the athletes. And it's created this chasm, social chasm between the two castes of people to where you don't see athletes at the grocery store or at the gas station for the most part, like you did in your neighborhoods and places back then.
I don't
know.
Yeah, well, I guess you probably don't see them in they're kind of concentrated in specific neighborhoods. I think people in Pearland and everything do, but or you know, out in Sugarland do.
But a lot of them just don't. But to the point about neighborhoods, like a lot of them used to live in the same neighborhoods as people.
You're talking about the most famous athletes, though. Yeah, right. Like the you know, there's plenty of athletes that are out and about people, but when it comes to the superstars, they're definitely, it's definitely more of a separation. And well, no, even just remember that. The documentary about the 93 Oilers, Kevin Gilbride is getting out into his truck and it's like a beat up old Nissan compact pickup truck. Yeah. You know, it was the money was so much different. Yeah. And a lot of the guys who weren't the superstars, especially, they were making good money, but it wasn't, you know, rich folks' money.
No.
So it was, I think everything was a little bit more relatable and it was a smaller. It was a smaller town, and it just felt more like it. When everything about, when people tell me stories about the 70s and 80s, it feels like if you're watching Anchorman, it feels like that. Like it just like whatever, however they portray Anchorman in the 70s, that's what it felt like in the sports side of things, where there was kind of a wild side to it too, and not to mention, in football, you're running the run and shoot. It's just you're running this kind of innovative, breaking all the boundaries, testing all the limits type of vibe to things. And it just felt maybe like freer and looser in a lot of ways.
Oh, yeah.
It felt a little bit almost like the stereotype of Texas. Of just kind of like, we're just going to do it loud and we're going to do it big and screw you if you don't like the way we're doing it.
Right. And our coach comes in and swings the saloon doors open and he's sitting there right there with us. Talking about the game afterward. There was just more connected, I think, probably. All right, so the folks on NFL.com, they've got 29 experts voting on who's going to win the various divisions around the NFL. Week one is here. We got our kickoff game on Thursday night. I'm sure that's a game you can hear on Sports Radio 610 between the Cowboys and the Eagles. By the way, you can hear tonight's TCU-North Carolina game right here on Sports Radio 610 as well. You Horned Frogs out there, you Belichick fans, if you're out and about, you need to get the game on the radio. We'll have it for you here on Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610. How lopsided a favorite are the Texans in the AFC South, according to the experts at NFL.com? Pretty damn lopsided. The Texans, who are a plus 105 favorite, so they're about a coin flip to win the division. It's basically the Texans and versus everybody else. 23 of the 29 votes go to the Houston Texans, Seth. The other votes, 5 to the Jaguars, and then 1 for the Tennessee Titans. I think it's interesting in that there are 0 votes for the Indianapolis Colts among the
I don't know. It's not like I'm bullish on the Colts or anything, but I feel like Daniel Jones has made people ignore the entire rest of the roster. And if you look at Daniel Jones, the one solid year he had in the NFL was in 2022. That also happened to be the year that Saquon Barkley rushed for 1,300 plus yards and had his best effort. So I feel like just pairing Daniel Jones with Jonathan Taylor and then having a good offensive line, the Colts still do have a very good offensive line. And then you add Tyler Warren to the mix and as well as their receivers. I think it's a good environment to get the absolute best out of Daniel Jones, which probably isn't all that great. But we also saw Gardner Minshew have perhaps his best performance under Shane Steichen a couple years ago. So I think their defense underperformed last year. They bring in Lou Anarumo this year, so the new defensive coordinator. I think there's a chance that the Colts end up being a respectable football team. And maybe I'm a little bit biased just because I saw them slug it out with the Texans last year. And we perhaps saw the better version of them. Well, Anthony Richardson is playing. And Anthony Richardson, not a good NFL quarterback. So I think that I just feel like the Colts, between the Colts, the Jaguars, and the Titans, for me, the Colts are by far a more complete football team. And then I look at the quarterbacks. Cam Ward's a huge X factor. I think Cam Ward might end up being great. Maybe he doesn't end up being great. I don't think Trevor Lawrence is going to be any different than how many different coaches and offensive coordinators are going to do this with Trevor Lawrence before they finally realize, okay, maybe the coaches aren't the issue. Maybe it's just a Trevor Lawrence thing.
Yeah, maybe. And yet, still, I feel like the biggest threat to the Texans is if Liam Cohen figures out how to unlock something in Trevor Lawrence. Like, Trevor Lawrence has done it. It wasn't for very long. It was for the tail end of 2022 when the Titans completely collapsed and the Jaguars won. I don't know. They won a bunch of games at the end of the year to make the playoffs. And then the Jags were 8-3 to start the next season, but it wasn't because Trevor Lawrence was great. The defense was actually pretty good that year. So that's my biggest fear, is that Liam Cohen figures something out offensively for the Jags. And I think the fact that that's my biggest fear illustrates how big the gap is between the Texans and the other three teams.
With Trevor Lawrence, this is where I'm skeptical of just how much Liam Cohen can do with Trevor Lawrence. I think just as it was with Tebow, after a while, you watch him, and Trevor Lawrence is much more gifted as a passer than Tim Tebow was.
No doubt.
But you watch him long enough and you realize, oh, he's just not that smart. You know, somebody's going to come in and somehow make him smarter, I guess. But the guys that have had success with Trevor Lawrence have been able to kind of, Doug Peterson was able to massage the fact that he's a first read quarterback and give him a bunch of easy options early on. And then you can have limited success, but after a while, defenses catch on to it. And now you got a career's worth of work already out of Trevor Lawrence, or multiple years worth of work, where defenses just know he's a first read guy. You just take away what his first read, and he's kind of lost out there.
Dude.
So I don't know if Liam Cohen's going to be the magical guy that somehow gives him 20 extra football IQ points.
Okay, so Trevor Lawrence, his cap hit actually is not drastic. His cap hit this year is only $17 million, then $24 million, then $35 million, and then $47 million in his dead cap hit, if they were to move on from him, that's the big thing, is $133 million.
If they were to move on after this season?
After this season, this season. If they moved on after this season, the dead cap hit would be $88.5 million.
Mm-hmm.
The dead cap hit 2 years from now is a more manageable $44 million. Now, we watched the Denver Broncos manage an $85 million cap hit with Russell Wilson. They're back in the playoffs, but they got their rookie quarterback right. I'm bringing this up because, man, if he is what you're talking about, unsalvageable, you know, if Liam Cohen can't manage around the fact that he's a first-read quarterback who's not very smart, the Jags are in hell. I mean, the magnificent Gladstone is going to have to do some serious magic to work his way around nine-figure and high eight-figure cap hits if Trevor Lawrence isn't the guy in Jacksonville. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing, too. Like, when they paid him, this isn't something like when they paid – I think when they paid Russell Wilson, people were like, okay, that's a lot for Russell Wilson. But he hadn't flunked out the way he did when he was with the Broncos. Like, Trevor Lawrence, them signing him to that contract, I think most people are like, what are you doing? Like, give him another year at least to see if he figures
That's where there was some anonymous executive that had a quote in an article in The Athletic where he said just the people are paying guys just to pay them now with quarterbacks.
Oh, yeah.
And because it gets to the point where it feels like, okay, I guess this is what we do. Right. We don't want our quarterback to be unhappy. I feel like if you've gotten to that point and you're not ready to pay him yet and you're afraid of him being unhappy, then he's probably not the guy. You know, okay, a little bit of contentiousness or a little bit of drama, whatever. If the guy's a competitor and he's built to be a franchise quarterback, he'll understand why you're not paying him yet, and he'll have a chip on his shoulder to try to prove it. I don't get why teams are – I mean, I get it to a certain degree, but just – caving and just thinking like, well, we absolutely have to pay this guy because, oh no, he might not be happy if you're not convinced that he's the guy already.
Are you at all concerned about the Texans after year three with C.J. Stroud being in that territory?
No, because I think C.J.'s already demonstrated that he's able to function at a higher level mentally, and that's the biggest thing you're trying to figure out by year three is, all right, does this guy actually have the gray matter to be a true NFL quarterback? Yep. And I think CJ's already demonstrated that. A lot of what he needs now are just, A, obviously better support around him, but B, just reps and time. And last year, I think, taught it. It's judgment more so than it is football IQ. And that's something that sometimes just comes with age. It just you got to get knocked around a little bit to refine your judgment. But like the football IQ side of it, I don't worry about it at all.
No, I don't either. Football Talk on Sports Radio 610, presented by Paramount Plus. You can't count on much these days, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Watch your local NFL game live every Sunday on CBS and Paramount Plus all season long. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today. Up next, Micah Parsons trade report cards. How are the experts grading the Packers? How are they grading Cowboys when it comes to the Micah Parsons trade? We got that coming up next. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. This was Jerry Jones last week after the Micah Parsons trade saying, we can win more going this route than keeping Micah.
Decided that it was in the best interest of our team to take the consideration that we have. We appreciate his 4 years, but we can take that consideration and we can win in our minds more than had we gone the other route and signed. That's not a negative on Micah. That's just unique to our circumstances.
Okay. So, I mean, I think what he's saying there, Seth, is that we can take the $47 million a year that Micah is making with the Packers and we can spread that out maybe a little more equally to make our team a better football team.
Yeah, and this is the problem. It's that all of that is true, and some people will idiotically just lap up whatever Jerry is saying, and you've got people like Peter Schrager saying things like, see, Jerry can think about the long term because he's the owner and the GM, and that's the benefit. Maybe if this was the third or fourth year of Jerry operating and you had just won a Super Bowl, by all means, then yes, I'll listen to that argument. You cannot sit here and tell me that one of the benefits of Jerry Jones being the owner and GM is because he can keep the long term in mind when he's the only GM in the NFL who has a job without having reached a conference championship game in the last 30 years. Mm-hmm. Like, your owner slash GM has been a horrible GM for 30 years. Who's going to keep their job? who isn't also the owner if they haven't gone to a conference championship game in 30 years.
Nobody, yeah.
So that's the problem, is that it's same as the DeAndre Hopkins trade or whatever. You can look at this in isolation and say, okay, it does make sense, and they're going to be able to re-sign their own players, et cetera, et cetera. Yes, that's true. But the problem is that Jerry Jones, right up until the point where he realized that he had to let go and it was a sinking ship in terms of trying to get a deal done, was telling everybody just the opposite, and that Micah Parsons would play and all of these things. And now all of the spin job, which people are lapping up as well, is like, oh, people don't actually like Micah Parsons. No, Dak Prescott actually hates Micah Parsons, all that. This is the problem with all of that. Is that, yeah, Micah Parsons has a little bit of a different personality. But when you take that personality and you put it in an environment like the Cowboys, which is a circus-like atmosphere specifically because that's what Jerry Jones wants, yeah, you end up with more personality conflicts and all of those other things. That's what happens because Jerry invites it. It's like if you took a bunch of kids and put them in detention with no detention hall monitor.
Mm-hmm.
And if anything, you bring in a drunken clown. Guess what's going to happen? It's going to be mayhem in the detention room that day.
Yeah.
And that's what happens in Dallas. Anybody that's got any kind of a personality quirk or anything, it's writ large because Jerry, it wants it to be a circus.
Mm-hmm.
It's the amount of bootlicking. Pete Schrager was disgusting on Twitter with all the bootlicking he was doing and water carrying he was doing for Jerry Jones. Like, no, you cannot look at this like a smart long-term move by Jerry Jones because he's Jerry Jones. Yeah, that's not what he's known for, is the smart long-term move.
Yeah, there was no planning that went into this. You know, this was Jerry Jones. I mean, Jerry Jones wanted to sign Micah Parsons. He had a handshake agreement with him, according to Jerry Jones. This got personal with David Mulugeta, and this was Jerry's solution to the whole thing, so I'm not buying it. So the report cards are out on this deal. I pulled five of them. I have Jeff Howe from The Athletic, Jeff Kerr from CBS Sports, Seth Walder from ESPN, Michael Milderhurst Schwartz from USA Today, who's got to be a nightmare to sign his name on things. That's a long name, man.
And then, well, yeah, you never get past the hyphen on that.
Right, right. And then Matt Verderam from SI.com. It's basically all the outlets we use when we power rank the power rankings. there is a consensus on this. The lowest grade that the Green Bay Packers got, Seth, from these five experts, B+. Everybody else, A-, A+, and Jeff Howe had A++, three pluses. The highest grade the Cowboys got was a C+ from Jeff Howe and Seth Walder. They got a D+, a D-. They got an F from Verderam from SI.com.
Well, the other part of it goes here, too, because once you get to the point in the negotiations where it was, it does make more sense for Dallas. Like, and if I could separate Jerry Jones and everything else leading up to this from it, I actually probably wouldn't give the Cowboys as bad a grade. They should have gotten more than... They could have gotten more draft compensation. It wasn't horrible, but they could have gotten more, especially because they're trading to a good team that those two first-round picks aren't as much as if they had traded him elsewhere. But the problem is, yet again with Jerry, because he let this linger and fester for so long, and he probably loved it because he got so many clicks talking about it, was how much they could have signed Micah Parsons for at the end of his third season compared to now and what this number was. So it's not... Jerry can say, well, this is just too much money and it's hard to put a squad together when we're already paying Dak Prescott and CeeDee Lamb. Both of those guys you could have for less right now if you'd been more forward-thinking on their contracts, but also Micah Parsons to an extreme degree. If you had signed him early in the offseason in 2024, we wouldn't be having this conversation.
Yeah, I did an article, I think it just went up this morning, for the Houston Press, where I had four Texans-related thoughts to the Micah Parsons trade. Texans-related thoughts. And I don't have it in front of me, but I can tell you the ones that I would tell you right now is that if you're a Texan fan and you're watching this whole saga play out from the time that Micah Parsons was eligible for an extension after his third year, as you just pointed out, through the day the trade was made last week, if I'm a Texan fan, I am happy about a few things. Number one is that I'm happy I have an owner It's not the GM of my football team. I'm happy I have an owner that doesn't create a circus atmosphere. As fun as it is for content and radio, it's not conducive to being a good football team. So I'm glad that Cal McNair and Hannah McNair manage the team the way that they do and let Nick Caserio and D'Amico Ryans do their job. Secondarily, I am happy that Nick Caserio is a GM who extends guys early, it would appear, that are big-ticket guys. He extended Derek Stingley Jr. a week into the business year this year. He extended Nico Collins after year three, 2 months after he was eligible for an extension. I would fully expect that Nick Caserio and the Texans are going to make every effort to extend Will Anderson Jr. and C.J. Stroud as early as they possibly can because the price is not going down. The price is going up. Number three, real quick, is that the environment, I didn't even have this in the article, but I think it's a great point by you about taking a personality like Micah Parsons and dropping it into that circus. I think the Texans building could handle a personality like Micah Parsons because of the tone that D'Amico Ryan sets and the guys that he brings in around him. Part of having good leaders in your locker room is to be able to take on C.J. Gardner-Johnson as your safety back there, who's a little bit of a live wire. Like, having a bunch of guys in the locker room like that should allow you to bring in plus players who maybe they love football, but they're a little off kilter, maybe, you know?
Well, plus, and just exactly, and this goes back to, and I'm just amazed that people buy anything Jerry is selling when people like Michael Irvin and Troy Aikman will just flat out come out and say that Jerry Jones is an issue when it comes to him caring more about hoopla than actual winning. That's why Aikman said he retired, is because he could tell that it wasn't about just winning there like it was when it was with Jimmy Johnson. So you have all of that. And then not to mention the fact that the reason that things got to the point where they did and it became this number that now all of a sudden Jerry Jones realizes, no, I got to build a team around him, is because he would refuse to work with Micah Parsons' agent or talk to him or have any kind of like actual negotiations with him. Like, this is, he created this own mess, and now he's trying to act like, well, no, I'm doing the financially responsible thing here and allowing Micah Parsons to leave. And all of a sudden there's a bunch of curiously placed articles about how Micah Parsons was actually very unpopular in the locker room and what have you. Yeah. Which weren't reported beforehand.
Right. Yeah. No, I can you imagine the Texans losing a player of Micah Parsons caliber because management didn't want to work with the agent?
And
this is not a one-off agent. Like, this is, okay, I could listen to it if this were some agent who was shady and Micah Parsons is his only client and that there's something surrounding this guy that the Cowboys just don't like. Even then, it's the guy's representation. You're required to work with him by the letter of the CBA. This is David Mulugeta, who's negotiated hundreds of contracts with NFL players. It's so random that Jerry Jones, who himself, as the GM of the team, has negotiated thousands of contracts with NFL agents, probably some with David Mulugeta along the way, that this is the one that he gets sideways over.
Well, and beyond that, he made it personal, too. I mean, he just flat out said he didn't know the agent's name. That's insulting as hell right there. And then claimed that David Mulugeta said that he was going to wipe his butt with the contract, which I'm guessing was an exaggeration. And yet you're putting somebody else's name in your mouth and making a folksy exaggeration or what have you. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the kind of stuff that people take personal. Like, as far as Jerry Jones making it about him versus David Mulugeta, Mulugeta bounced Jerry's head off the canvas on this one.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he just completely destroyed Jerry Jones. I enjoy watching it. Yeah, I saw somebody in a reply to one of the Athletic articles about this. The Athletic had about like 27 articles about this. Somebody said, here comes the media complaining about how everybody wants to talk about the Cowboys as they talk about the Cowboys. I'm like, no, I don't complain about wanting to talk about the Cowboys. Mm-hmm. I get annoyed that they call themselves America's team when they're like pretty much the most despised team in the country. It's fun to talk about them when it's stuff like this, mm-hmm. when it's talking about the Cowboys being a flaming mess of a disaster. I mean, they're a burning dumpster fire that's on fire. The entire fire is on fire, Sean.
Yes, yes.
Like, you've plunged this burning dumpster into a volcano pit.
Into a fire. Text message. I was in Dallas over the weekend, and 105.3 The Fan was saying Micah betrayed Jerry Jones. Do you agree? All right, let me stop right there. This happens with us sometimes, too. If someone was driving around, I heard Sports Radio 610 said this.
Yeah.
I need names. I'm guessing the whole station, 105.3 The Fan, doesn't necessarily feel that way. I just want to point that out. Is there an argument that Micah betrayed Jerry Jones? No, I don't.
Well, the way Jerry's framing it is that we talked and we had a deal, and then all of a sudden Micah said he wanted to check with his agent. That's right. Why, he sounds like a shady salesman there. Yeah. That's by the rules of the collective bargaining agreement. When the player wants his agent involved, you got to work with his agent. And Jerry kept trying to cut it. And that's where it felt so shady. Is it like, hey, just me, a billionaire, talking to this 24-year-old, and we came to an agreement. And now all of a sudden, he wants advisors to tell him about how I would tell, of all young athletes, Micah Parsons would be one of the first ones that would be like, dude, you don't need to be operating without an agent, okay? Mm-hmm. Some guys can do it, but I don't think you're the guy. So no, Micah was doing the smart thing, which is when you're negotiating with a billionaire, my blanket advice is, even if you don't feel like you need an agent or a lawyer, just have a chat with one. Just have a chat.
Yep.
There's so many times in my life where I felt like, oh, I don't need to bring a lawyer into this. And then 36 hours later, like, oh my God, I can't believe I didn't talk to a lawyer before.
I need a lawyer so bad.
Why did I not consult with somebody before that?
All right. Payne and Pendergast with you. We head into the 9 o'clock hour. Appreciate you getting up with us on Labor Day. We are here for you. We good? All right, 713-572-4610 if you want to get in. Hey, up next, the Astros are getting criticism over something that happened in the game yesterday. Is this criticism as a franchise and as a ballpark justified? We'll have that for you coming up next.